I sent them a proposal. They accepted my proposal, gave me this residency, and when I sat down to make the piece, it just sucked. And it was like, holy crap, what am I going to do? You know, I don't want to make the piece I proposed to them. And the space was in an old firehouse. Part of my proposal was using the sounds of old fire bells, fire truck bells, which is totally stupid. And like, I don't even know where I can find old fire truck bells or recordings of them. And it just seems so, like, it's too logical for me, for what I want to do. And I just spent all this time noodling. I noodled and noodled, and I tried other bells that would be, like, suggestive of fire bells, and I tried all this stuff, because you're, like, trying to, like, weasel out of the thing you don't want to do. And I was lying in bed one morning, which I rarely do, I just get up. But this was driving me crazy. And I got this image of this painting, which I love, by Charles Deanham, which is this painting of the Fly, which is based on a poem by William Carlos Williams, which is based on William standing on a street corner and a fire truck going by. So I went and got the book and, you know, started reading it and realized that that was the perfect source material for me to use for this project. So unknown to them, they still probably don't even know it, because I just didn't tell them what I did, but I arrived with half of the stuff that, like what I told them it was going to be, and instead of adding fire truck sounds, I sang that poem over the piece, but in a way where you can't really understand what I'm saying. And I'm just not the kind of artist where I could, like, think of that from the beginning and then go to it and use it and it will work. It always has to go through that process of getting lost and just, like, being frustrated and mushing stuff around. And then, it, like, because it's the last thing you would have thought of, you know, which is what I always want to use. If I used the first thing I would have thought of, it would be set. So it's like, I always have set up some rules for myself, but I always want the freedom for something arbitrary to enter into it. And then later you realize it's really not that arbitrary. At least if you have this, like, kind of intuitive, logical path through things. I mean, I don't think you could break down the connections I make between things and put them into the same piece and logically say this connects to this for this reason. But it connects for me, you know. So, yeah, that's it.
It's kind of, are you trying to make, like, your stencil, I can't think of the stencil for the work, you know?
Uh-huh.
Are you trying to make that less detectable? Because you said kind of that.
Well,
trend.
I'm trying to make it less logical in a way, you know. Like, I mean, if you look at like someone like Saul LeWitt or Mel Bochner, you've got like they have their system, right, or their stencil, like these cubes Saul LeWitt did. You know, like there's a list of rules, and then you make every variation on that rule, and it's very dry. You know, I love that work, but I don't want to make that work. So how can I sort of have half of that and half of this other process where you're kind of wandering around? So you connect that process with something else that wouldn't make quite so much sense with it. And for me, that creates something that's, in the end, is much more open, because it doesn't just refer back to the system that it was made through. The system is like, you know, it's like the chicken, and then, like, there's all the seasonings, and there's all this other stuff there. So, I mean, because for me, it's like if a work has a logical end, there's so many times where once you get to that logical end, you're done with the work. And for me, there's so many other things in the world that have logical ends, and I want this aspect of things to be more open. You know? It's my own interest, of course. You know, I think ultimately we make things because nothing else. You know, there isn't anything else there that's going to fulfill that one little need. Even the work I love. You know, I don't want to make the work I love. I want to try and make something else from all of those things. And I think that's the other reason why I'm like that is, you know, I don't just come out of someone like Saul LeWitt. You know, there's Art of Dove, and there's Cage, and there's all these different kinds of places that I like to kind of pull
was gonna ask you to talk about Cage a little bit, but we can talk about that a little later and just sort of in the general procedures and things like that. But let's definitely take some questions, but leave time for sound stuff.
Okay.
When you're doing sort of long-term projects, as they change, do they change like intuitively, or do you just get bored with what you're doing changes?
I try to set up a situation where I don't get bored, because if I'm bored, that means I'm doing something very repetitively, and I'm not really, I'm not easily bored, so when I'm bored, it means there's really very little engagement between me and the thing I'm making. Like when I made that sculpture, it took about 2 years with little 490 little pieces, and there was a point where, I'd never wanted to see a piece of wood again. I'd never want to see my belt sander again, because everything was done on the belt sander. And but then, a couple days later, I do something on the belt sander, it would be just some stupid little thing, but it would open up a whole other way of working with a little square piece of wood. Like all of a sudden I could, instead of just like shaping the top, I could shape the middle, or just these stupid things. But once like that little door is open, then you're starting over again, so that like excitement comes back. It's for me, I've never worked in series in the paintings before because of that. I always wanted to get everything I had around a piece of information or an idea out of me in one work, because I felt like if I did variations on that, I would just be cranking stuff out. And it wasn't until I started with these silent world paintings where I really feel like each one is fresh, and if I find I'm falling back into a pattern, I don't know about being bored, but it's like if I feel like I'm repeating myself, or I'm not learning something, not really engaged in the process, then I stop and try and work around that. It's in some ways I'm running away from. That's how I came up with working this way, because I was working these sort of organic, intuitive, abstract paintings some like Terry Winters or something. And I just felt like I'm just going to be a painter like that for the rest of my life, and I could be engaged in what I'm doing, but it's all like the situation will never change. It's me, the canvas, and my intuition, and I'm going like this, And like the idea of that was very boring. The process of making paintings in that way is not boring, but the notion that my process would never change, except new materials or new knowledge of paint or this or that, it would be nuances, And it just seemed too easy for me. So I'm always running away from.
Would you say any of your work is at all politically or civically engaged in any way?
No, I think that just by making work, I fit that bill. I'm interested in doing this as a, I have no interest in seeing that in artwork myself personally, because I can see it in the newspaper or any number of places, especially in LA. But I think just the notion of making things that function in this way, they have no purpose, essentially, is kind of in that way. For me, it's not a stance or something, but I think it's sort of like leading by example or something, in some weird way. There's like this, I don't know, I'm really bad with remembering quotes or things, but it's like this, there's this old Chinese thing where it's something like, it's better to sit and pray than it is to be a doctor, because if you're a doctor, you're only healing a certain number of people, but if you're praying for all mankind. It's like, I really believe that making art, especially at this point in time, has some of that in it. I don't like to get all new agey and weird about it, but I'm completely committed to what I'm doing as being something very important, not the work, the activity of doing this every day. I think that's as close as I get to it. Nobody's ever asked me that. I never talk about it, because I just don't think, it sounds kind of like I'm Mr. Important or something, which I'm not so interested in, but I really do. I think how with everything that's going on right now, it's difficult to go into your studio and think that what you're doing has a kind of higher purpose, and that it's okay to ignore that. problem is the art world is just full of people who already know all those things, you know. I mean, if I go to an opening and there's this, you know, big stupid paintings with like George Bush with devil's horns on them, I mean, it's like, dude, I know that, and everybody in this room knows that, you know. You can get this message out to people that don't know that through so many other mediums. I don't really think this is the forum for it. Yep.
It seems like if you work, you kind of see, sometimes you have an internal structure, you know, it might not be visible to like people listening, you know, but there's definitely a thought process which you think we're longing for, like set of relationships. And I was wondering if you've ever tried to like, go against that and intentionally try to break apart the relationships, or so what you, you know, even though it's like you're related firehouse to like this poem and the fire truck passing by, you know, would you ever think, if I think fire truck, I should go the opposite or like try and break apart my relationship?
It's, I mean, yeah, I think it's, I have to say, generally when I make a connection of two things, I'm kind of in awe of the fact that I connected these two things. So I tend to kind of go with it a lot, you know? And the only reason why I would step away from it is if it physically wasn't working. I mean, like I knew when I came up with this idea with these fire truck bells that it was a stupid idea and I was never really going to do it, you know? I mean, I just, but it was a way of getting to another place. But I think, I mean, when I was in grad school, everything, every single thing you did had to be backed up in some way that was very logical and generally that you could reference in some sort of text. And I'm constantly running away from that. And I think I'm constantly trying to find things that I can connect that wouldn't necessarily, like, that I couldn't back up in kind of intellectual terms. You know? I mean, I can back up my use of this Williams poem because the space was a firehouse, but you know, generally it's like, how does that connect with the other source material I used, which is I sent a tape recorder to someone who never made tape recordings and a map of contemporary architecture in New York City from the 60s and asked them to tape record five buildings, whether they existed or not. You know, I mean, how that, you know, it just doesn't always, you know, connect logically. But I'm not very good at kind of, once I kind of set up the situation to think that I might be doing the opposite of what I would naturally do. So I don't usually stop in the middle and think, oh, I'm doing this, I should do that. Certainly it's happened, but, you know, those are all like really bad habits that you get into, you know, it's like, so you sometimes, like, there's like the deck of cards that Brian, you know, did it, the Bleak Strategies cards. It's a deck of cards with little phrases on them. And when you're supposed to use them when you're stuck working, you know, and you pull one out, one of them says, if you're thinking of one thing, do the opposite. You know, and the deck of cards is perfect for kind of bringing that kind of method to how you work. Especially, I mean, you know, I'm by myself all the time. I'm in there, I'm lost in my own thing. I use these structures that I set up to pull myself out of that, but it's rarely to the degree of something like you're saying. Something to strive for. Yeah.
Like when you're creating all of this art, you have, and this is just my read, mm-hmm. and what you said. You've got like a stencil that you sort of follow, but that has really nothing to do with what comes out of it. A lot like how certain chemicals have properties, but that really has no real logical explanation for what the product is.
Right.
How do you judge like whether or not you like your work? Like, is that strictly intuitive as well?
Yeah, it's. I mean, I try and push it to the point where it's only intuitive, because
right.
I feel like if I can break it down and logically tell you why I think it's good. You know, it's a closed system, you know, and so it can't, for me, again, you know, it's my own shit, you know, everybody deals with their own place, but it's like, my intention might be the weakest part of the work. And so my intentions always deal with these structures, which deal with the trigger, which deals with the starting point. So the only way to judge the end result is if I think it works. What does that mean? It doesn't mean anything. It's like right here, and you just you listen to it, or you stand in front of it. I mean, I've worked on sound pieces where I just couldn't get it to sound the way I wanted it to. I couldn't get it to like work. The piece was done, and everything was composed, and there's something missing. You kind of tweak some EQ and play with the panning a little bit, and it gets worn the way I want something to sound worn, and it works. And it's not, there's no logic to that. It's the kind of thing I want to hear. I like. So, yeah.
And I don't know how much live performance you do, but I just had a question about, you talked about setting up systems and structures for yourself, and I was wondering how you apply that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't use a lot of score type of things when I work. Usually the parameters determine the sounds that I'm going to use. And that limitation is difficult enough for me to work within. But the last sound installation that I did, which I don't have a picture of, is I used the vowel structures in some text to trigger five different sounds. Five different tones, and I'm supposed to do a performance in 2 weeks for a museum that's having a Dick Higgins show, and they're having this like Fluxus night. Well, I don't know why they asked me to perform, but so I'm going to use one of his texts as a score for a performance, and it'll be the first time that the performances really logically link back up to all the other things that I do. But usually I make contact mics, and I have guitar pedals, and I basically go somewhere, snoop around, set my stuff up. I mean, I played at Bard on Saturday, Friday night, and I set up my stuff, my little mics and my pedals, and they had like a big stack of metal chairs, so I like dragged that over. I mic'd that, and then I went outside, and I got a bowl full of snow, so I never see snow. I found like some other little bits of junk on the floor, and so the whole thing is built in the space, really. And I have a few like things that I always fall back on that I bring with me, but I start with nothing. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to play. I don't know. Obviously I know it's going to probably be quite repetitive, but I don't. I just start, and I kind of. I want the audience. The first live shows I did two live shows right after my first CD came out, and they were kind of like experimental karaoke. I had three of the loops that were on my CD, and I improvised over them, and it was just terrible. It was like this mentality that nobody owned my record. I don't know why I thought people in the audience would want to hear the songs from the record, and so I. It just seemed lame, and so I had this idea that I'm not an improviser, and I'm not even a musician. I wanted everything to be live if I'm going to play live. So the live things sound different than my recordings, because I'm improvising live and building a piece in front of you using, pedals, and I don't have the same abilities I have with tape, and so it's quite different. But it's less surrounded by a kind of rigid structure and principle. I mean, I'm not really a composer in that way. I don't like narrative structure at all in sound. So I have a good friend who works with the computer, and he sets up like all these kind of, I don't know a lot of musical terms, but he sets up all these like shifting parameters for the information so that like any one of these notes can happen in any frame of time. And so you just kind of push play, and the piece kind of makes itself, and it's quite wonderful. But I can't do that, and I can't do narrative work, so I have to do this thing that's kind of in between.
Can I ask you want to ask a question, then we'll hear some sound effects?
Sure. I don't know if it's exactly a question, but I just wanted you to go back to this notion of the intuitive process and.
in relation to concepts and ideas, because I have the feeling that it can be, this kind of intuitive process can be misconstrued as this kind of, you know, irrational, you know, just gut reaction process that is not exactly where I see you're coming from, because there is a kind of processing of your conceptual framework that even if it's through a kind of negative dialectic, or if you're like, you know, just kind of negotiating or obliterating, you know, sources, there is still an engagement, and I think that the meaning kind of derives from that.
Well,
and so and from which you can then arrive at a more intuitive place. So do you,
I
don't know if it's a
what
question.
You're saying. In a lot of ways, this is the problem with talking about the work.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are all kinds of other things that I just refuse to talk about,
mm-hmm.
that are places the work comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the kinds of experiences and activities I want to have in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd love somebody like Agnes Martin, who talks only about intuition and inspiration and letting this thing like come into you, come out of you. And what I feel like I'm doing, you know, in some ways, I'm always the last person to know what I'm doing, but I feel like I'm basically like, in its simplest form, I'm right-handed. So I'm taking my right hand and tying it behind my back. I'm trying to do what I want to do with my left hand. And that forces me out of a kind of thinking mode into a place where I'm frustrated and I'm really working with this, so that when I let go of that frustration, this just does something. In a way that for me feels more natural and intuitive. I mean, it's like that's a word that has so many different levels of meaning in a way. You know, and it's, I don't think it's this like thing of just me sitting there with a blank piece of paper and waiting for something to happen and doing this thing. You know, it's like, I want a lot of things to come out through the process for myself, so that I'm less aware of that situation, of it seems too big to like put a piece of blank paper there, and then it's like your gesture is so important. It's about the gesture, it's about you. I want my intuition to come out of the working process without it being about me. You know, and so that's some of the reasons why I accept these situations. I don't want to take myself out of the whole thing, but I don't want the thing to refer back to me. You know, that's why there's a lot, not much mark me. You know, that's why in my sound work there's very little gesture as well. I'm not interested in them like expressing my inner emotions. You know, I want them to come from that inner place that my emotions come from, but I don't want them to. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So
I just wanted you to elaborate.
So, do you want to hear something?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, I didn't really bring that much to listen to because I hate being in a room where people listen to my work.
You can
listen.
Maybe it's a question.
make fun of it.
I
keep folks here after me. Thanks very much, Steve. Appreciate it.